Well, it's been said that good leaders tell great stories, and today we're going to have an episode that's going to dive into the meaning of that, and I've got a guest that's going to really enlighten us about ways that you can up your leadership game by telling more convincing stories. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Leadership Powered by Common Sense with your host, Doug Thorpe. Here's Doug.
Well, welcome, everyone. This is another episode of Leadership Powered by Common Sense. I am your host, Doug Thorpe, and today I have Mr. Kiran Thirakan, and he is going to be talking to us about his work with helping leaders tell more charismatic, more effective stories. So I may well have butchered that intro, Kiran, but clean it up for me.
I think you got it. Doug, thanks for having me on your show. Yeah, I wrote a book a couple of years ago called The 7 Essential Stories Charismatic Leaders Tell. So you got most of it there. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, as we did the lead up and the prep for this show, you actually helped me understand some things about the versions of stories that I've always relied upon, that it turns out I was only hitting 2 out of the 7. So I had a lot to go and a lot to learn, but I'm excited about getting into this and having you share with us these different elements. But before we get into that, though, talk to me a little bit about your journey, how you got into this work.
Very accidentally. So I'm in my late 50s now, and over the last 35 years, I started off right out of university in sales, got into marketing, then I got into sales and marketing, running sales and marketing teams. I spent 12 years of my life in the corporate finance business, buying companies, selling companies, raising capital for companies. So I've been in a lot of boardrooms over that period of time. And, eventually what it came down to me is that I'm working with a lot of startup companies on their marketing and sales plans, many out of the university, a lot of science backgrounds, technical backgrounds. They didn't go to school to earn their PhDs to become salespeople. But they find themselves in a position where they have to sell their ideas, raise capital, and get the companies moving. And that is a way, that is a persuasion process that they did not learn in their science degree. And so I needed to create a format for them that would allow them to get their ideas across without sounding salesy. And that's how we came up with the 7 Essential Story framework.
I think that's amazing, and that is a very common plight that I see with founders and entrepreneurs, the people that create what might otherwise be great businesses, but they are so focused on the technical aspects of what they're doing or the nuances of the delivery that they really don't think a lot about how to explain the story and talk about what they're trying to do and the benefits and value and so forth. So run down, if you will, let's just kind of dive in. Can you hit what the 7 classic stories are?
Sure. Well, let me give you a little background on where this idea came from. So many years ago, about 35 years ago, I ran across an anecdote about the early days of Apple. And Apple had hired a very stellar marketing consultant in Silicon Valley by the name of Regis McKenna. And Regis had a line that great marketing takes its cues from great religion. And so in order for, and there's been thousands of religions throughout history. You know, if human history has been around for, let's say, 10, 12,000 years now, recorded history, 5,000 years, something like that. There's been thousands of religions, but we have some very dominant ones now. At the top, we have, with 2.1 billion adherents, we have Christianity. 1.8 billion, we have Islam. And then it goes, drops like a rock from there. it doesn't go down to 1 billion. No, it goes way down, 300 million, for different things. You know, you have everything from Zoroastrianism and Jainism. Hinduism is there. And even Judaism is there. But Judaism only has 14 million. But one of the reasons it's still making that list is because its storytelling powers the Islam and Christian story narratives as well. So what struck me with this was that in order for religions to have staying power, beyond the fact that you worship a specific deity or anything like that, is that you have to be able to communicate the, you know, everything about the about that religion. And it comes down to basically seven stories that all great religions have to relate. And I can get into that now if you want me to.
Yeah, please do.
So the very first one is creation and origin. How did this start? What was the inciting incident? And so for Christians and for Jews and for Muslims, you know, it would be the story of the Garden of Eden. You know, and it would be right at that point in time. And there's all sorts of things that happened. There was perfection. There was sin. There was banishment. You know, you have all these different types of things. And if you take a look at every company that's out there, let alone every movement, every organization, there was an inciting incident that caused them to say, hey, there's got to be a better way, or we need to get out of here, or we need to do this thing. And when you have that creation story in place, people understand why you began. Why did this come into being? Second story is all about identity, values, and beliefs. Who are we as people? What are our core beliefs and values that drive the decisions that we make in order for our organizations to continue growing and moving forward? And when you have that identity, people can say, hey, we're just like them, or we want to be like them, or we'll never be like them. So you have that polarity induced, and then you can attract and repel your perfect adherence. Story three is the big idea. What is that central revolving concept that everything else comes around? And so in the New Testament, for example, we'll go back to Christianity, it is all about the concept of salvation, you know, and believing in Jesus Christ and such. But, you know, new companies, and Apple's a relatively newcomer to this. Apple's central big idea was design. So technology is a big part of it. But, you know, innate in every Apple product, except iTunes, I don't get the iTunes part, but embedded in it, is this concept of fluid, aesthetic design, not only how it looks, but how it works. Right. And that's what makes the Apple ecosystem so solid. Story four is all about the enemy we face. Who do we fight against, or who do we fight for? Who do we fight against, and who do we fight for? And it allows people to rally now around a common cause, because you've identified something to be overcome. And an enemy doesn't have to be an individual. It can be a challenge. We overcome graft. We overcome childhood poverty. You know, we overcome food insecurity. There could be a lot of things to overcome. So it's a challenge, the enemy we face. Story five is the mighty winds. And the mighty winds are those big macro trends that either propel your ship's sails forward or impedes them. And so there's a variety of different mighty winds. For example, you know, one of the big mighty winds that has come about in the last 2,000 years is the concept of democracy. That is a big, mighty win. And there's been all sorts of counter trends to that. So you've had, you know, communism, you have socialism, there's a variety of things. But here's a recent one. Here's a technology win. It's all about this little tiny thing in 1969 called DARPANET. And DARPANET connected three universities that allowed them to, you know, in a very rudimentary manner, share files digitally. Well, what is that today? That's the internet. And the internet is embedded into every portion of our lives. It facilitates the vast majority of commerce that goes on, you know, in the beginning transactions, let alone the actual facilitation of money transfers and such. You know, that is the backbone of what is going on today. Well, that's that technology wave, that wind, the mighty wind, powered the ship sales of companies like everything from Apple to Facebook to eBay. You know, it is a central part of what we do. Story six is if the first five stories are the left side of the equation, there's a little equal sign that says, if those are true, if those are believable, then this is what we must do. We must do it. And that is the journey we must undertake. If all this is true, this is the journey we must undertake. And finally, story seven is a meta-narrative. And it's a meta-narrative that combines all six stories, the previous six, into one telling. Hopefully it's a short summary. But it gives them a couple of one or more keystones that guarantee the win. So here's the entirety of stories. And this is why we will win. So story seven is why we will win. And typical keystones, you know, here's some real simple keystones. God is on our side. superior people, superior technology, superior knowledge. It's something that guarantees win. And there's hundreds of keystones. But when you combine these first six stories with a keystone or more, then people are energized and propelled forward and they can gain confidence in what you're saying. And that, in a very short synopsis, are the seven stories.
So I think when we spoke at the first, prior to the show here, we were talking about, I was explaining, I was big on encouraging leaders to really lock in on their vision of, you know, where it is we're going. And so that falls into one of those early stories, right?
Absolutely.
It's not necessarily the origin, but it's a statement of, I guess the journey we're going to take is what it amounts to.
Yeah. It's the big idea, right?
It's a big idea,
yeah. We could become, or this is what we can install, you know? And then the journey we must undertake is how we are going to move that into place.
Yeah. Yeah. So as you've done your work talking with corporate leaders out there, where do you think people start their own understanding of this? How do they embrace this and pick it up typically?
It's been my experience that they don't.
Okay.
And because they don't, they leave a lot of power on the table. It's right there in front of them. The tools are all right there. It's so easy to pick up and install, but they don't do it. And they are much more focused on advertising the product, advertising the service, getting sales in the door. But when you employ a story framework, a narrative base like this, especially with the seven stories, you are going to find that the stories do the heavy lifting of persuasion for you. And you can't, it is absolutely impossible to buy any product or service without first buying the transformation story that product is the fulfillment of. So the very first thing anybody buys is the transformation story with them as hero, which makes you the fairy godmother or the wise wizard that grants them that incantation, the magic amulet, which is your product, that will transport them from where they are today to where they want to be. And so that's the business we're in. So when you install that narrative, then everything else becomes simpler because you're not selling anymore. You're actually just checking off boxes that they've already created as a persuasion narrative in their mind.
Why do you think it is that business owners and executives miss this pretty much altogether?
Because they've never been taught it. They've never been exposed to it, except for in a very tangential way. We are all buffeted by the stories we tell. You know, if you've got kids, they are masterful storytellers. Mom, Billy's mom is letting him and whatever it is, right? And there's a little story. Now there's a little social proof in that, a little authority in that. And because of that, there's a story doing the heavy lifting of the request and whatever the request is, right? But without the story, you know, if he says, I want to go to the zoo this weekend, that is not nearly as compelling as saying, Billy's mom is letting him go to the zoo this weekend. Can I go with them? And now we have the beginnings of a story there, right? And it's much more contextual and persuasive as a result.
It's an interesting thought, and I'm replaying about a half dozen of those that my grandkids have spun up recently.
Well,
you know,
well, they,
you're right, but you're right. They've
tied you around their finger a couple of times in the last year, haven't they?
With masterful story, and it does always involve, you know, Billy or Sally or Judy or, you know, whoever.
The kids are masterful, and kids are masterful persuasion artists, and they do it through narrative. And what happens is, as you go and get educated, you lose those natural skills you had as a child. And so in a lot of ways, you have to go back to that. And, you know, they don't do it because they know it. They do it because they've seen it works on mom and dad. For some reason, it works on mom and dad. Let's do it again.
So they do it more, yeah. With companies struggling to, you know, make the next sale or make the next set of numbers, how do you typically work with them to encourage them to sort of begin embracing this approach to getting their message out there?
Where it probably begins, you know, if they're not using a story narrative, but the vast majority of people are not using narrative in their persuasion devices, we would go back and take a look at how they are bringing in new sales, and it could even be employing new people because you have to sell people and coming to work for you, right? Let alone investors, let alone whatever it is. You're always in the persuasion business. Let's say it's a customer, though. We would go back and see what is already working. We'd also take a look at what's not working. And between those points of polarity, there are several things that hint to a story. So whatever you're doing right now ignites a story in your customer's head. It has to, because the very first thing that anybody buys from you is the transformation story. If they don't have that transformation story in their head, whatever that is, you are irrelevant. You're functionally irrelevant and emotionally insignificant. And you want to be the opposite of that. So once you get that initial trigger, that inciting, that ignition point, you would then go to the customer and say, what is it that you're feeling now? What is the story that you're telling yourself now? What is it that compelled you to look further and eventually buy? And then you download that, and that's the basis of a story. And it's never a story. It's a story framework. You know, multiple stories depending on use case and the kind of customer, demographic, psychographic, all these kinds of things.
You know, I've read Blade. I guess I was introduced to it about 2 years ago. I think the guy's name is Dan Miller. He wrote a book about the art of the storytelling. He doesn't break it into the seven that you do, but he gets the point across that to be a more effective marketer or business developer, that you've got to rethink your version of the story. And what I recall out of his teaching, the biggest pivot was the idea that if it's your business, you are not the hero of that story. You're that guide. You're that sensei, that fairy godmother, as you say. You have to make the prospective customer the hero of the story.
Yeah, without question, right? But what I found when I was, and I wrote this book in 2019, and it finally was published at the beginning of 2022, right? So 2018, 2019, took me a little while to get it out there. And what I've discovered is that when people master these stories, their persuasion ability goes through the roof. Let me give you an example of that. Let's take one of these stories. Let's talk about the mighty winds. The mighty winds are the big macro trends in the marketplace that either propel your ideas forward or impede your ideas. Right? You never want to be counter to the wind. You always want to be with the wind. Every business is a sailboat. Okay, it's not a powerboat, sailboat. And sailboats need wind to power their sails. So you want to be with the wind. And so when you tell a powerful narrative, it does the heavy lifting of persuasion for you. So let's say that you are in the business of investment sales. You're an investment broker. Okay, so you're selling stocks, securities of various kinds, etc. Okay, here's the way you would do that. Now, here are the six macro trends: societal trends, technological, environmental, economic, political, and legislative trends. Those are the six macro trends that buffet everybody's ships. Either power them forward or refuse to power or may capsize the boat. You want to be with the wind. So I'm going to take the technological one. And here's the technological trend. These three things will absolutely crush the cryptocurrency market by 2023. Okay, so if you are holding on to Bitcoin, you want to get out. If you are not into Bitcoin, you want to wait. Because after these three things crush the cryptocurrency market, it'll come right back again. Now, I haven't even told you what's going on. But that's the big idea now. I put in a story form that's given you enough intrigue that if you have any kind of incentive to look at cryptocurrency, I've got your attention now. You're going to at least want to know what the heck I'm talking about. Okay? And if I have any authority prior to this, if I'm Charlie Munger or Warren Buffett, who has never invested in cryptocurrency before, and they're saying this now, I'm paying attention, especially if I own Bitcoin. But now I've married it with a mighty wind story, and I've got your attention. That's in order for me to carry through the persuasion process. Very first step, get your attention.
And I'm just curious, and I may be drilling down too deep in the weeds here, but is the mighty wind the only one that involves those dynamics that can be swirling around you?
In my framework, it's the six. The mighty winds encompass those six macro trends, right? Yeah. So when you're doing an industry analysis, on any sector you're going to invest in or start a company in, you would have to do an environmental scan of these six macro forces just to see what is going on today, right? So that's where that's coming from.
Okay. Well, it is hard to believe we're already up on a break point here. This time just absolutely flies once we get on the clock. But we're going to talk about these seven great stories that charismatic leaders can tell us, and we'll pick it up again right after this break.
Business is all about solving complex problems as fast as you can create them. Become the best problem solver by leading others to greatness too. And the first step is going to DougThorpe.com. Doug Thorpe is known globally for coaching entrepreneurs and business leaders, improving their performance and the work output of everyone surrounding them. You can find health, wealth, and happiness by learning to lead others to health, wealth, and happiness. Go to DougThorpe.com now and order Doug's books or hire him to coach your managers. That's Doug, T-H-O-R-P-E.com.
Well, hello again, everyone. We're back, and we are talking about the seven great stories that charismatic leaders tell. And Kieran, real quick, run through the seven again just to launch this second half here.
Sure. The seven essential stories are this. Creation and origin. First one, creation and origin. Second, our identity, beliefs, and values. Third, the big idea. Four, the enemy we face. Five, the enemy, the mighty winds. Story six is the journey we must undertake. And story seven is why we will win.
So if you think about that list real quick, I had referenced the idea that a lot of times when I talk to leaders, they might be good with one or two of those, getting their vision across to people, but they inevitably don't cover all seven. And quite frankly, I didn't think about all seven until I met you. So it was enlightening to me to broaden the lens on that. For a company that has been knocking around for a while, they've got some degree of success, but they're really wanting to 2X or 3X or even greater grow the company. Is there one of these stories they need to focus on to try to get across to get going?
Devo, what I would focus on, first of all, these stories are part of a story plex. They are a narrative plex. They interlock with each other. They reinforce each other. At the beginning of this show, I said that great marketing takes its cues from great religion. And any one of these seven categories will have multiple stories that could illustrate the category's concept. But they reinforce each other. They introduce adjacent categories. They bring in new ideas, but they all are part of this big persuasive ball of energy that's coming at you. And so if I was going to start on one, I would want to follow it up with the others. But if I were to start on just one, it would be the big idea. And the big idea is the genesis of the transformation story. So anybody that's coming to you, they're only coming to you for one reason. They either want to support, enhance, or repair their sense of self-identity. They want to be transformed in some way. So take a look at any product you've ever bought, any service you've bought, anybody that you have brought into your life, you know, as a friend, as a mate, whatever it is, they do one of those three things: support who you are, identity-wise, enhance who you are, identity-wise, or repair who you are, identity-wise. And repair is always a poor thing to bring other people into your life with, trying to repair your own sense of self-identity. But those are the three reasons. And that is the big idea's genesis. So it would be one of those three things.
Well, the big idea almost seems intuitive that that's, that's what you got to have. You're trying to explain to the marketplace why your service, your widget, your invention is better and going to be able to do more. Is there anything that you've found that explains why people struggle so much trying to articulate that?
Because they focus on their product. And that's not what you're going to focus on. That's not what you should focus on. That may be the second or third thing you focus on. The real big idea is about transformation, period. With or without your product. It's about transformation, period, with or without product, without your product. So if that's spiritual transformation, if that is transformation, like, you know, you're finally becoming a van family, You need a van because now you got two kids, right? And the family's growing. You just bought the new house. Now you're going to get the minivan. And so that's a transformation story. But it doesn't have to be your minivan. You're not telling a story about the Ford minivan or the Chevy minivan or anything like that. You're talking about your family's growing. Your family's growing, right? The kids aren't in the little chairs anymore. The little, what do you call it? Toddler seats, car seats anymore. And it's going to be, transporting soccer balls pretty quick here. That's the whole front part of the story. Okay. And once they recognize that is where they're at today and where they need to go, then you can slip in the product, the brand and such. But until this is installed, the big idea, which does not involve your product. The big idea is transformation. And it happens to be your tool set, the product, is going to enable the transformation. But that's a secondary consideration. It's not the primary consideration.
So Simon Sinek is, a pretty popular speaker and author now. And he wrote the book Start With Why. So where does his version of why fit into this spectrum of the seven stories?
I think it's why is probably embedded in almost all of these things. Like if you go creation origin, part of the why is the inciting incident. Why did this start? Identity, beliefs, and values. Why do these persist? So the why part, ultimately, there's a great book out there, by the fellow by the name of Viktor Frankl. It's called Man's Search for Meaning. And we are always trying to discern meaning in whatever we are engaging in, whether it's products, services, people, environment, whatever have you. We are trying to figure out, what does this mean? And so that meaning is answered by the question, why? Which is why his perspectives on the word why are so powerful, because it's an innate part of what we do every day. It's only when your life is meaningless that you become despondent, that you become, all these things that are not good, and maybe there's not so great things that happen thereafter, as you choose some not so great choices, right? Everything from addictions to maybe something worse than that. But if your life has meaning, it doesn't even matter what you have materially or what you are losing or achieving or anything like that. When it has meaning, you come alive. It's in here. That spirit of yourself comes alive because you see purpose and meaning in your path.
So understanding this framework and the seven different stories, how does a leader effectively employ this for a day-by-day existence? I can see the big brass letters up on the wall with one of the stories, pasted in the lobby of the building and all, but it's obviously got to be more than that to make it be powerful for the masses. And how does a leader really deploy this on a day-to-day basis?
Well, the book is about 190 pages, approximately, right? But only about 90 of those pages are about the seven stories. The front half of the book is all about your culture. And so what we say about culture is the culture is the always on operating system that guides behavior, even when there's no one around to watch, reward, or punish that behavior. People just know what to do. So culture is like water to a fish. The fish doesn't have to recognize the water to be given life by it or given death by it if it's toxic. Right? The fish doesn't know it's in water. It knows only when it's out of water, when it's out of that life-giving oxygen in the water. So the culture part of it, the seven actual pillars of culture. And so what you do is you reinforce the culture of the organization with the behaviors that you want to see illustrated by the seven stories. So when that culture is infused with these seven stories, it comes alive. It goes in the direction that you want. Now, what doesn't change is the values of that culture. So the values of that culture are going to be, and values, the most common definition of value is values is a high order principle that governs behavior. So values don't change. So one of the examples of the book is about haute couture. So it's all about high fashion. So haute couture of 1920s Paris runways would be only considered nostalgic today. Okay, you know, you wouldn't be able to resell it except for from a nostalgia perspective. But the values of indulgent fabrics and hand-sewn mastery in the tailoring are going to live right through it. You know, that is as relevant as it was in the 1920s as it is in the 2020s. Those things persist. So when you go out, the stories you're telling are the stories that you want to reinforce your culture with, especially the values, identity, beliefs. And that's how you create this this rising momentum as you go forward. The way a FedEx would do it is that they would tell stories of how their people went above and beyond. There's a classic story, might be apocryphal, about some guy who saw that the package was there. It was not going to be able to be delivered by the truck. So he went and chartered a helicopter. And he got the package to the place on time by 10 a.m. the next day. Now, is that true? I don't know, but what a heck of a story to reinforce the values of absolutely positively overnight.
Yeah, I think a lot of industries have ended up, they end up, if you explore them long enough, you're going to hear those kinds of stories of, and again, whether it's urban legend or a real myth, it does make for a great story.
Great story.
Of enforcing that. Can you think of, I'm really going to put you on the spot here, can you think of any current, business leaders that are famous for their ability to spin that story?
Well, if you take a look at, now this is more, showmanship, but if you take a look at probably the most prevalent example would be people like Steve Jobs and the guy who took his place, Elon Musk. Like, he has stories out there about his flamethrowers. Now, what does that have to do with Tesla's or the Boring Company or SpaceX? Nothing. But he's, the moment that he has the opportunity to start and amplify a story, he's on top of it. Absolutely on top of it. Great stories about him, couch surfing, from place to place, even though he's worth a few billion dollars at the time. But he was cash poor, stock rich, but cash poor. Great stories about him and doing the final fire of the SpaceX ignition up, and if he didn't make that one, the whole thing would come collapsing down. And that was the genesis of the current version of SpaceX, which is, replacing NASA for all space flight. They can do it better, cheaper, faster, more efficiently. Now, how is that all possible? It starts with story, because with story, it attracts attention. With attention, it attracts investment. With investment, it attracts the ability to get customers, because they can see all of the social proof and authority revolving around the central idea of that story.
Speaking of social proof, that has become such a hot commodity now for providers and sellers, retailers, otherwise. Where does that element of social proof weigh in as far as your framework goes?
I think so. Well, I love that book. I like Robert Cialdini's book. And I don't know how you pronounce his last name. Some people pronounce it Cialdini. I pronounced it Cialdini. And his six, he's got seven elements right now. Okay. He's got reciprocity, authority, social proof, commitment and consistency, liking, scarcity, and now unity. That's the seventh element that he just put out. And all of those things would be weaved all the way up and down, inside and out, through and through each one of these stories. And it's a way to amplify the influence of the story. Here's social proof, part of that story. Here is the authority part of the story. Now we go back to Billy, who wants to go to the zoo this weekend with his friend's mom and friend's family. And Billy says, Johnny's mom is letting him do it. Social proof. Then you say, but the principal said, if we go and visit the leopard cage, we can see whatever it is. So now we are employing Johnny's friend, Billy's mom, which is quasi-authority, and ultimate authority, the principal. to go visit the leopard cage. And so when you have all these things, and I weave as many of these, influence elements throughout the stories as possible. Every one is like a part of a martial art kata. So it's never one punch. It's one punch, the reverse kick, spin it around, right? And it is the combinations that lay your opponent flat. That's the way to look at it.
So if I were to be coaching an executive that admits, and he counts this as one of his biggest weak areas, being able to work these stories, where does he get started developing that skill?
I don't know if it's a skill to develop. What it is, we are all natural. Here's a good one for you. And I own a digital marketing agency here in the city. And, in the old days, we used to produce video for our clients. And most of our clients, no, we don't want to get in front of that. I'm not good in front of a camera. You put them in front of a camera with the mic. First couple are a little tentative. But by the time they get going, it is a gusher of story. They get right into it because, when they are passionate about something, all I really need is some passion behind you, some deep belief in the values that your customer, that you want to deliver to your customer through your product or service and your company. And if you've got that, I can ignite that story flow. Now, what I'm going to do with all those ideas is I am then going to funnel that into the seven categories that you want to tell. That's all that has to happen. It takes next to no effort at all.
I could see that just kind of a function of beginning the discussion, and they may, they may not start out at the origin story, but they'll start somewhere, and then next thing you know, they'll be telling you how they invented this thing in their garage, and it became a great idea, and so on and so on.
Absolutely correct, right? So you're going to go through the stories that they can relate to. To begin with. But now you've got seven stories here. And okay, we need a little bit more on the journey we must undertake. Okay, we need to buttress up the big idea, right? We probably need a couple more elements in there so people could understand how it relates to cryptocurrency and why this is going to be the next big thing. So as long as you have the framework, you can start with the stories that they're already telling. And I guarantee you that even if they don't have the story yet, for the category that you have, it's there. They just haven't verbalized it yet. Because in order for you to be a CEO, like a real CEO, a real business owner, you would have to have some understanding of the markets that you are playing in, the competitive space, right? The technological advances and recessions, all the macro trend type of things. And then you have all this up here, which is how you develop a path forward. Now, you are telling yourself a bunch of stories. What stories are you telling yourself? Let's download those to begin with. That's all that needs to happen.
So what happens if you do the work and you really try? And I think when I say you, I'm thinking of a leadership team at the top of the house. They say, all right, we're going to go figure this out. We want to do some work in this. They put all this together, and then it hits them. Our culture is nowhere close to compatible with all this that we've just said. What do they need to do next?
Well, that's a whole different category. I'll tell you one of the favorite things I used to do when I was in the corporate finance business, buying and selling companies. And the companies that we were looking at, we weren't investment banker deals, doing $1 billion, $2 billion deals, right? We were doing $30, $40, $50 million transactions. And one of the best things we used to do is we'd take the CEO and the CFO and the chief operating officer, put them in three separate rooms and ask them where the company is going. And the CEO has this idea, the chief operating officer has this idea, and the CFO has no idea that can fuel the financial needs of this or that, because they're all operating in their own little bubble the vast majority of the time. The vast majority of the time, they are doing it on a business as usual basis. But when you merge those stories together, you're going to see the gaps that are clearly evident. We don't have the money to do that, or we have tons of cash sloshing around. What are we going to do with it? And so By the way, I've never really seen that last one. I'd love to see that one day. But now, once you merge these stories, the leadership story, the how the engine room and the ship has to be restructured to get there, right? And how we're going to fuel it with the gas of cash in order to get the right speed, momentum, and direction to enable all of these things to happen at once. And I am always shocked how many times, you know, those stories have not been merged together.
Yeah, I agree with you. I've seen it, and it's interesting. I've gone into places where they've hired me. They say, we need an executive coach to help us change our culture. And they'll say, we've created this leadership framework. Here's some values that we want to represent. And usually the first question I'll ask is, okay, I'm not going to argue with your list. These are all noble attributes, but how does that fit in with what you're really doing?
Right. I always get a chuckle when they have honesty as a value.
Yeah.
You know, honesty. Now, why I chuckle at that is that the values that you have should be differentiated values. You know, they set you apart from the competition. Some are integral to the way you have business. So quality has to be job one. You know, it certainly was for Ford for a number of years, right? But job, it has to be there in all the products you have and such, right? Quality's got to be there. But it's not a differentiated value, right? The same thing with honesty. The only time honesty is a differentiated value is if you are the head of a mob. Of the mob. Now you're the most honest mobster going. Now that's a differentiated value. Good for you. You have brand differentiation. I can go to Sonny and he's going to make sure that I'm going to be okay. He's going to be fair with me. So that's differentiating. Mm-hmm. Now, what makes you different now is if you're a steel mill, well, you have the most advanced technology for steel making processes. That can be a value. You are always at the cutting edge of technology for steel process. Right. And but other companies can say, we're never going to be there. We are always going to be in the stalwart processes, but we're going to make the steel a lot less expensive in the process. This is going to be very high tensile strength steel for the highest possible uses. This is going to be regular steel for, you know, just the everyday stuff that you're going to put up in a little building and a warehouse and away you go. Both of those are now differentiated values for the markets that you are serving.
Yeah. Makes sense. Well, this has been great, and it is hard to believe we're up on our time again, but thank you so much for doing this. Tell everybody how they can get a hold of you if they're looking.
Well, Doug, the book is on Amazon.com. It's called The 7 Essential Stories Charismatic Leaders Tell. But if you come to my website, strategypeak.com, and I'll get you all the details for your show notes. If you come to strategypeak.com, on the right side, you'll see a little column. You can download the full infographic of all 7 stories with a little example of how they work. And that's free. So please go ahead and do that. And if you get a chance to pick up the book on Amazon, is $3.49 for the Kindle version. So very inexpensive, okay. Right? Just to keep everybody honest, pay a little something for it. But yeah, the book is still doing well on the charts.
Well, that's great. Well, thank you. And yes, we will have all those links and references in the show notes that you can get to. And look down there if you need that information. But thank you again for showing up and sharing this with us. I think this is powerful and very good information that surely can help businesses really create that differentiating factor that they might be struggling to find.
Exactly right. Doug, thank you very much for having me on your show. First one in Texas.
All right. Well, good milestone here. We'll have you back. Yeah. So thanks, everyone. It is another episode of Leadership Powered by Common Sense. We're going to wrap it up right now and sign off. But thank you for listening in. We look forward to seeing you again soon.
You've been listening to Leadership Powered by Common Sense, hosted by Doug Thorpe. If you would like to know more about the coaching and advisory services he provides, visit DougThorpe.com.